Hello and welcome to the Deep Track Podcast, an exploration of watches, trends, and culture with a few adventures along the way. I'm your host, Blake Bettner. This is a special episode, and I'm coming at you live from the beautiful city of Geneva, where I am attending Watches and Wonders 2024, taking in all the new releases from, I think it's close to 60 brands that they've got there this year. It's getting a little bit bigger. They've changed the layout slightly this year. There's a whole upstairs section that has been opened up as well. And I think, I know at least one brand is up there, Bremont, who this is their first year. I have a pretty big booth up in the upper section. So I've had a chance to see quite a few of the new releases today and go hands-on with a few of them as well. So I wanted to get my first reactions to day one out there and talk about some of the new watches from Tudor, from Rolex, a few other brands that I've seen throughout the course of the day and had a chance to at least digest a little bit and offer some hopefully interesting thoughts on. This is a reminder to head over to YouTube and subscribe to the YouTube channel over there. I'll be posting content here from the show all week on some of the interesting releases that I come across, but only if I feel like I've got something interesting to say about it. I don't want to needlessly spam content out there. So let's start with Tudor. Tudor's a brand that has had, well, obviously they've had a great decade or more, but they didn't really have release seasons at Watches and Wonders or what used to be Basel, with watches that maybe wouldn't necessarily jump out at you as something that is super exciting, but they would kind of sink in as great watches in time. This year was a little bit of the same, but they also had a release that I think was instantly, oh yes, this is exactly what we've been looking for. And that is the Black Bay 58 GMT. So since the Black Bay 58 was released, I think this is something that people have been asking for, especially in light of the Black Bay GMT, which is a watch that was kind of immediately criticized, I think, for its thickness when it was released, and potentially rightfully so. You know, the wearability was not too bad, but my only issue was it was, and this is the same, thought that I have for all Tudor watches that are criticized for being too thick. It's not necessarily the pure thickness that bothers me or the number there. It's really how they handle it, in that it's just kind of one vertical wall with no shape to it. You know, and I've always said if they put a little bit of shape in there, tucked in the bottom, that it would wear a little bit better, and I still believe that. But they've addressed this year by releasing a Black Bay 58 with a GMT complication. So, of course, you will remember the Black Bay Pro, which was a smaller GMT watch, but it was still a bit thick. It was, I think, 14.5 millimeters thick, something like that. So it was kind of frustrating, I think, to a lot of enthusiasts to see it come into the smaller case, but still have some of these thickness issues that they needed to work out. And that's because it was using the same movement that was in the Black Bay GMT. So Tudor this year have actually developed a new movement for this watch. And to me, this is the big news from them, even more than the watch that it released in. And I'll get to my thoughts on that in a minute. But I think Tudor should be applauded for this movement that they've developed here for the Black Bay 58 GMT. It is a METIS certified movement, and of course it brings traveler style GMT functionality to it as well. And the whole watch is, it's just over, I should say just under 13 millimeters thick. I think it's about 12.8 millimeters in thickness. And that includes a bit of a raised crystal there as well. I will say, even though that thickness is totally reasonable and it wears fine, in the case is honestly, it's great. It still has that just kind of straight vertical wall on the side of the case there. So, you know, if that's not a look or a wearability thing that you enjoy, you're still probably going to have the same issues here with this watch. You know, I think it wears just as well as a Black Bay Pro, for instance. But visually, it's just a little bit slimmer on the wrist and a little bit less top heavy. So I think they did a lot of things right with this in terms of the movement that they made for it. Oh, and I'll also note that this is the first time that the Black Bay 58 has received a date complication. This watch has a date over at the 3 o'clock position, which may or may not be for you. Now, I'm a person that is a little bit agnostic on the date. As long as it's handled well or it makes sense with the rest of the watch, then I think it's fine. When it's placed in the context of a GMT, I feel like it makes a little more sense compared to when it's just a three-hander, at which point, I'd probably prefer a cleaner look of a dateless approach here, but I've got no problem with how they've done it here. The only thing that I really take issue with on this watch is the color scheme that they've done here. So this is done with a matte black dial and a matte aluminum bezel. The bezel is black and red, and the rest of the dial and even the numbers on the bezel itself are all done in gilt gold. And it's a look that's not exactly my cup of tea on any watch. I've had the same feelings on the original Black Bay 58 and some of the other Black Bays that they've done that have gone with this treatment. And it's just not a look for me, and I don't think that with the red coloring there, the black and the gold, that it's all that flattering to the watch. But again, I think what you should be excited about here is the case that they've made here for this, and more importantly, the movement that they've developed here. This much smaller, much trimmer, Meta-certified master chronometer, GMT movement, and I deeply hope that we start seeing this movement placed across more watches, either in the Pelagos collection or the Black Bay collection. You know, I don't really care what they put it in, but I just want to see more options with this movement. Overall, I don't think it's a bad-looking watch or anything. It's just not a color scheme that appeals to me personally all that much. I think that the, and I've said this before, and I think that the kind of manufactured vintage look is wearing a little thin on most people. It's not something that I've ever been entirely fond of, but I think it can be done really well, and you know, where it looks really good. But this particular execution left me just a little bit cold. That's all. If you like it, I think that's great, and I think that you should find a lot to celebrate in this watch. Now, this is being offered with two different strap options. There is a riveted three-link oyster style bracelet, as well as a rubber strap that fits into a steel end link at the case. This is not a situation like the Pelagos 39, where it just comes in the box. You can choose one or the other when you buy it. One thing that I'm a little unclear on is if you buy the watch on the steel bracelet, if you have the option to add the rubber for an added cost or anything like that. I think it's just a couple hundred dollars difference between the two. On the steel bracelet, it's priced at $4,600, and on the rubber strap, it's priced at $4,400. The better option here might be just buying it on the bracelet and then getting the rubber strap for it, if possible. The other watch that they released that I'm actually really excited about is just regular Black Bay 41, but the colorway is just pure black and white. And this is something that I've been hoping would come into the Black Bay 58 range. This is the first time that they've done this, just a pure kind of black and white with no gilt accents or anything like that. And it looks really, really clean. And it has the same changes that they made to the case and the dial, very kind of small, subtle changes that they made. All around, though, it adds up to an appreciably better experience on the wrist, I will say, and that all carries through to this new watch. It's very simple, but it's very clean, and it looks fantastic in person. This also gets a Metis certified movement as well. So this is offered on three different bracelets, a five-link kind of Jubilee style, and then the riveted three-link oyster style, as well as the rubber strap. This is a watch that impressed me the most in person. This look, this really kind of clean, fresh, just pure black and white, looks absolutely fantastic. And I'm really thrilled to see them continue to work with the original Black Bay 41 formula that we first saw released in 2012. I think it still works just as well today as it did back then. Yes, this is still a little bit bigger and slightly thicker than the 58. But again, there's something about how they've treated the case here, its profile. They've trimmed it up just slightly, but it's enough that it makes a big difference here on the wrist and visually as well. So this is a watch that I'm really excited about, and I'm happy that they've released it. And in hindsight, I think the burgundy bezel version of this was probably the best release that they had last year as well. But again, that gets back into the gilt accents on the dial. And that's something that they do with a lot of their black dials. The Black Bay 54 had the same thing, had kind of a stark black and white bezel, but on the dial, there's gilt accents there. So, you know, it's something that they're known to do, and they seem to enjoy doing with these designs. And I don't mind it all that much, but I really think that these designs work best when they're in just kind of their pure, modern, clean executions. These designs stand up really well to that. These are, you know, timeless designs that are based on a timeless design from, the 50s and 60s, and they've been brought back here, I think, in really exceptional fashion here from Tudor. So the Black Bay 58 GMT, excited about the movement and the case on that one, but the actual star of the show here so far for me is actually the new Black Bay 41. And I really hope that this signals a change in them moving away from the guilds. Or even if they don't want to move away from it, that's totally fine. At least adding the option here for some of these designs to exist without the guild accents here. So great job to Tudor. And again, that's a watch that you might not think twice about if you're just scrolling through your Instagram feed. But I tell you, in person, this watch works really, really well. So the Black Bay 41 with the black and white dial and bezel is priced at $4,225 on the rubber strap, at $4,425 on the Oyster style bracelet, and $4,550 on the Jubilee style bracelet. The caliber in that one is the MT5602, and the new caliber, in the GMT, the Black Bay 58 GMT, is the MT5450, which is COSC and METIS certified. Okay, let's move over to Rolex quick. So I think they had a pretty conservative year this year, in all honesty, and I have no problem with that. I think we've gotten into a situation where some of these brands are kind of forced to think about their release season like it's sneakers or in a regular fashion type cycle where they feel like they have to be releasing new models so often. I feel like that's unsustainable. And I don't mind seeing them pull back like this and just kind of focus on some of the smaller details, flesh out some of the existing collections. And that's exactly what they did this year, fleshing out some of these existing collections. I want to start with what might be my favorite release from them this year, and that is a new 1908. Now, if you recall, I predicted that we would see new 1908 watches, but I was thinking that we would get them with new complications added as well. That was not the case, but we did get a new dial treatment here. And this is done in a platinum case with an ice blue dial with a rice grain guilloche motif. And this is very, very beautiful in person. I was a big fan of the 1908 when it was released last year, especially in its white metals. And here, I think it works really well with this dial texture, and I'm happy to see them building onto this collection, the 1908 collection. This does keep the open case back that we saw last year and the kind of coin edge bezel that's on it. But the real star of the show here is the dial and the texture that they were able to achieve. And it's all kind of emanating from the sub-seconds at 6 o'clock on the dial. And I feel like the sub-seconds are kind of hit or miss. I know that they ruffle a lot of feathers of enthusiasts out there, but I happen to enjoy the sub-seconds and especially how it's been executed here by Rolex. I really enjoy the font of the applied numerals at 3, 9, and 12. My only potential issue with this one is how they've kind of left a clear space in the guilloche to write the word Rolex. I don't know if there would have been a better way to handle that, or if they could have just left it off and just had the crown there or something. I don't know. But it's kind of like an outlined square or rectangle that is free of the texture, obviously. And then they have placed the word Rolex in there in black. It breaks up the otherwise kind of beautifully uniform pattern that they've got going on here. But overall, I really love this watch. It's really beautifully done. The color is really beautiful. There's a bit of green in there. It's almost kind of teal in its light blue and how they've handled it. But overall, again, really happy to see them building out the 1908 collection. All right, let's move over to the GMT that was released. This is the reference 126710GRNR. Which stands for Grey Noir. And now this is something of a spiritual successor, I think, to a watch that was discontinued a few years back, the 116710LN. This was a ceramic bezel GMT that was with solid color. So there's no two colors on the bezel here. It was just a single solid black, and it had a green GMT hand against a black dial. So Rolex was bringing this back exactly almost, except with a bicolor bezel, and it's black and gray, obviously. So at a glance, I think it reads very very similar to the old LN that was discontinued, but with the added, functionality, practicality of the split bezel there. I don't know if it's actually helping, but I think it's more a case of them wanting to adhere to a formula that is uniform across the entire collection of having bicolor bezels. So, of course, this is not the first time that we've seen this bezel used. We saw it released last year in gold models and Rolexor models, but this is the first time that it's come over to a steel-cased GMT. Everything else remains the same. There's no revised case design or movement architecture. architecture or anything like that. So, you know, I think this is what you might enjoy about this watch is that it's a GMT that really kind of flies under the radar in a way that the other references do not, that the other bezels do not, frankly, which all have... you know, some bigger colors going on them. Even the black and blue, the blue is quite bright and vibrant, much brighter than the blue on the top half of the BLRO. And then the VTNR, that green is very bright and vibrant. And then, of course, the Pepsi bezel is two different colors. So, you know, if it's a watch that you like and you like the idea of using it practically but don't like the idea of calling too much attention to it or yourself, I think this GRNR will be a welcome watch for you. And yes, the Pepsi Bezel GMT is still listed on the Rolex website, so I take it that that has not been discontinued. Which of course brings up maybe some of the issues in how these things, these rumors like this get started in the first place, to kind of pump up the price a little bit in the aftermarket prior to release season, just based on this speculation, which, you know, sucks. It's a bummer. And yeah, I think that people that want these watches should be able to get them, preferably at retail. And if not, you know, I hate seeing the prices go up so high like that. So hopefully we see them kind of normalize after all of this, especially if we can confirm that the Pepsi bezel is indeed still in production. I'll be seeing more of the Rolex watches later this week, so I'll have more thoughts on them as well as some hands-on video later on in the week, so keep an eye out for that. One of the things that I wanted to talk about is not a watch that I got to get hands-on with today, but it was a new release from Patek Philippe, and it's a new Aquanaut that that gets kind of that old-school grenade dial. It's a dual time, and it's quartz. And I just think that this is a really well-done, well-executed watch. I really like the idea of treating a quartz movement with such respect like this. And I just think the design of the watch looks really exceptional. So that's probably the Patek that I am most excited about. They did bring a new 5164 in white gold with it's kind of a desaturated blue dial. And it's the same blue that we saw in a new 5980, also released this year in white gold. That is, of course, a Nautilus. But that has kind of a denim-looking strap on it. It's a very unusual strap decision. But I think it looks really great. The 5980 is, of course, you know, a pretty great-looking, unique-looking, I should say, chronograph from Patek Philippe. And the 5164 is kind of an all-time classic travel time watch from Patek. And the new watch with the quartz movement is a reference 5269R. It's in rose gold only, and it has maybe a slightly darker version of that desaturated blue. We saw a reference released last year with a similar color scheme to this, but this is a far simpler version, and of course it has that great kind of dual time functionality here for local and home time indications, and this day-night indication for home at the bottom of the aperture. And, you know, perhaps most interestingly, they've written the word home below the number 6 hour, which is, I don't know, it's a very odd decision, but honestly, it's so odd that it almost works in the way that it adds just kind of a funky personality to what is honestly a pretty funky watch. And I've always thought that about the original dial texture on the Aquanaut, which has these much bigger squares kind of laid out in a kind of a spherical type pattern. So it goes back to that. I just think this watch hits on all levels. I'd really love to see them do a steel version of this, honestly, that was priced like very accessibly as a good entry level Patek, or even take away the dual time indication and just make it a time only watch in quartz. You know, I think that would be an absolute home run. Let's see here. Did they release a price on this watch? It's priced at 30,000 Swiss francs. So, you know, I mean, it is rose gold and it's still high quality quartz movement of theirs. And it's even nicely finished. But it is a closed case back, of course. You know, I think something like this in steel without the complication at like $10,000 would be pretty awesome. I'm not holding my breath for anything like that to come anytime soon. It's 38.8 millimeters and 8.7 millimeters thick. All around, just really cool watch from Patek. And I think it goes pretty well with the new 5164 and 5980. Another watch that caught my eye today that I haven't had a chance to see yet is a dive watch from Zenith. I've been waiting for them to get back into the dive game for a while, and they brought this back in a couple of ways, in a Defy Revival version, which brings back a classic design from 1969, the A3648. This is a 37 millimeter, very angular case with it kind of has a hooded lug that the bracelet tucks into. It has a bright orange bezel and an orange chapter ring along with orange hands. It's all kinds of funky. It's $7,700. But the one that I really like more, I think, is the Defy Extreme Diver. And this has been released in a black and blue dials. And both of them keep that orange chapter ring on the inside. This also gets the 12-sided kind of inner bezel here. And then on the outside of that is a rotating bezel piece that's got these kind of thick coin edge bezel areas that stick out a bit far. It's got these gigantic hands on it, and then it has a bit of an exaggerated star pattern on the dial. It's 600 meters of water resistance, which is I think just under 2,000 feet of depth rating. So, you know, plenty capable, this thing. It's using a time and date El Primero movement, the 3620 SC with 60 hours of power reserve. I really like the dial design of this watch. I really like the case design of this watch and how the bezel has been incorporated here. This is maybe the funkiest watch that I've seen from them, and they do some funky watches, but I like that this is done in kind of modern guise. I also really love the strap options here. So there's an interchangeable strap that the thing comes with, and there's a fabric strap that's made from recycled fishing nets. It's a single piece fabric strap that goes through an end link that fits into that quick release system here. So I do not have a measurement on the thickness of this, but there's an angle of it on the website. You can see the helium release valve, that it looks relatively thin as well. So this is a watch that I am very excited about seeing here this week. You know me, I love dive watches and funky dive watches with a lot of personality, and this certainly has that. And I also enjoy what Zenith does with their Defy Extreme line. So of course, Zenith replaced Julien Tournier, the CEO, with a guy from the leadership team of Panerai. So hoping I'll get to chat with him at some point this week or sometime soon, just to get a sense of where his head is at with what Zenith has been doing the last few years and how he plans to continue that or iterate on it or change directions or what his plan may be. I think Julien had this Zenith on a real hot streak here over the past few years. I really like what they've been doing. So I'm really keen to pick his brain a little bit to see what's going on or what he has planned or how he even thinks about the brand. So hopefully we'll get to talk to him at some point soon here, get him on the podcast or something like that. So keep an eye out for that. Oh, and before I forget, Alanga & Zone released two watches, and they are both pretty ridiculous in kind of the best way. So they released a new generation of the Datagraph up down with a blue dial that is quite beautiful. I did get to see this watch in person only briefly, but of course, you know the Datagraph up down. It is gorgeous front and back. This makes a few slight changes. Honestly, not a ton of huge changes here visually to the watch, other than the colorway that's been introduced. But alongside that, they introduced a Lumen Datagraph Perpetual Tourbillon. So it keeps the flyback chronograph in place, and it adds the perpetual calendar complications, and it's all done with the Lumen dial, and it's also put in their honey gold case. And the price on this thing is like $650,000 or something like that. It is utterly ridiculous from top to bottom, but absolutely beautiful. So I think they've done an exceptional job here with this watch. Really fun watch to see. I did get some brief videos of that one as well, so hopefully they came out well, and I'll be able to share those soon on YouTube. All right, so those are the watches that caught my eye on day one. I'll probably record another special podcast later on this week with another one of the journalists that's here, so we can kind of riff on a lot of the watches that have been released once we have a chance to fully digest everything that we've seen. Overall, though, no huge fireworks this year from the big heavy hitter brands. I think you have to kind of like look into the cracks a little bit to find the really exciting things. And when you do that, I think there are quite a few really exciting things going on here. As far as Tudor is concerned, I think that people will be talking about both the Black Bay 58 GMT and the Black Bay 41 with the white and black kind of monochrome dial and bezel. I still say that I prefer square hour markers with the Snowflake hour hand. This, of course, keeps those circular hour markers. So the Pelagos, I think, still hits differently to me in that regard. But there's a formality to this new watch that is obviously not captured in the Pelagos range at any level. I think when it comes to a watch like the Pelagos 39, which is kind of a viable competitive watch to this Black Bay 41, they feel very different to me in my mind, both on wrist, I think, and just visually. And again, I think it gets back to that formality, especially on that five-link bracelet, which just works so well with that formula. Yeah, I see this something that's more akin to maybe a modern Submariner or something like that, or even like a 14060 from the 90s. It has that kind of a vibe, but also just kind of stepped up a little bit further in terms of the formalities, a few more polished surfaces going on here. And it's a very clean design overall. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, so definitely go find the videos over on YouTube and leave a comment, or go to the articles on thedeeptrack.com and leave your thoughts on these down below. That is going to do it for this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. I apologize that this is being published a little bit later in the day than it normally is. I ask that you bear with me here as I get some of this stuff ready while I'm running around trying to gather content from the show floor. But keep an eye out for another bonus episode coming later this week with another member of the press. That should be a real fun one. Maybe we'll get a couple of beers involved there as well. So, all right, that'll do it for this episode. Thanks so much for tuning in. Until next time, take care.